You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, missing my cohort, Jay Gonzalez. But I have a special in-studio guest with TJ Juskiewicz of the El Tour de Tucson, the new executive director. And I'm going to have Matt Moreno of Go AZ Cats on the phone any moment now. Welcome to Friday. How are you, TJ? Welcome to Tucson.
Hey, doing great, Steve.
Great, great. We're going to get to your story after I talk to Matt briefly, see if he send me some any money from California. I know he's got a ton of it. And we'll talk about your past, your future, and your sports love, as it were, because you kind of have the same kind of wheelhouse as I do in terms of eras, 70s, 90s, 80s, 90s, stuff like that. Matt, are you on the phone, Matt?
I am here, Steve.
Matt, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
Fine. Are you still hunkered down in L.A.?
I am. Your mail, your money is in the mail, Steve.
Even know how to get to the mailbox, so I know that's not true. Hey, Arizona picked up another recruit today?
Yeah. Number 16 for the 2021 class, and the third in the last couple of days. They obviously made a late addition to the 2020 class yesterday. They announced it kind of quietly before the big one yesterday, which was obviously local running back Stevie Rocker Jr. from CDO. The most notable pickup for Arizona so far in this class. We at Rivals have him ranked atop the group and higher than anybody else so far that Arizona has on board, but so far, after that slow start, Kevin Sumlin and his staff are kind of making their way through this group, and you can only sign 25 each class, and they're at 16 already, so they've made some pretty good headway.
How did it go from 0 to 16 in a matter of 2 months, maybe?
I think some of it has to be credited to the pandemic. I mean, I think there was that initial uneasiness of making a quick decision, but as things went on, I think a lot of recruits started to see other prospects take their spots and maybe fill up a little bit with the class, and I think there was some pressure put on by Arizona staff. I've heard a couple of the commits that I've talked to so far have really mentioned that you know, Arizona staff said, hey, we can't hold your spot forever, and we really would like you to, you know, make a decision if this is where you want to be. And so a lot of recruits have gone that route and said, hey, I don't want my spot to go anywhere. We don't know what's going on with all the uncertainty with college football, whether my scholarship's going to be available, if there's no season, are they going to cut my scholarship? Am I not going to be able to go to Arizona? And so I think a lot of recruits just kind of decided to go that route. A lot of guys are starting to take visits on their own, even though it's not technically allowed. It's still a dead period until the end of August. And so they technically can't take unofficial visits or official visits, but they can. A lot of recruits that I've talked with, including a handful that have picked Arizona kind of these last couple of months, have said, you know, we've taken it into our own hands, and we've, you know, made trips to Tucson, at least walked around campus what we could. Can't get into the facilities, can't meet with the coaches, but they just kind of needed that last little push to see things for themselves. So I think you've seen that in a few cases as well, where, you know, school ended, they kind of could focus on the recruiting side, and a lot of them have taken some trips with their families, and it's kind of led to more commitments.
What's the quality of the player? We know that it's, in the past, it hasn't been great, twos and three stars. Similar?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's definitely quality over, or quantity over quality. At this point, like I said, we have Stevie Rocker as the highest rated recruit, but he's still just a three-star prospect. So, and he's far and away Arizona's top recruit, at least according to Rivals right now. So, in this class, so that kind of tells you where things are. They're not really too involved with a ton of four-star guys, or four-star guys have not really looked their direction at this point. So, as things stand now, it's probably going to be a very similar class to what Arizona's had the first couple of years under Kevin Sumlin. Not a ton of players with offers from major programs. Arizona, a lot of times, in many of these cases so far through the first 16 commitments, Arizona is either their only offer or by far their biggest offer. So that's kind of what the kind of class is built like right now and kind of looks like. And so I think for Arizona, the focus as they start to fill up a little bit more and get through the summer, they're more than likely going to hold on to some spots, and you have to kind of focus on that quality over the quantity.
The getting Rocker helped a lot locally because they had been shut out a lot recently outside of Joyner coming in. But what does this mean to the program locally?
I think it's a big deal. I think I received a few messages where a lot of people just within the business on the recruiting side of things kind of mentioned to me, hey, they needed that one. after he made that decision. I got a few messages like that where, you know, a lot of people who kind of understand how recruiting works, who know kind of the recruiting business, said, hey, they needed that commitment from Stevie Rocker, because it just sends a message that they're at least able to keep some of the talent home. We've seen so many of the top players from Tucson these last few years just leave and go to other parts of the country. Some are completely leaving the West Coast and going to, you know, play at Ohio State, play at Texas, play at other programs. And so you can't have that if you're Kevin Sumlin. You need to keep some of those players home. It's going to be more difficult to keep, you know, players from Phoenix and maybe other parts of the state home, but you need to keep those guys from Tucson home. And so landing Stevie Rocker is a big deal. I think it sends the right message that they can compete with some other programs and keep those players home. It wasn't like Stevie Rocker, like Arizona was his biggest offer, his only offer. He had other options, including Cal and BYU and Nevada. And so he had some other options around the country, but decided, you know, I want to play at Arizona, play down the street, and kind of continue my career there. And so I think it's a positive move for them. It was one of those recruits that Arizona, I think, as things went on, you realize they need to have someone like that in this class just to kind of continue to show that they're making strides with local recruiting. And so it's a positive get for Arizona. And like I said, it's one that matters kind of from a perception standpoint, but also just from a quality player. I mean, he's somebody that is talented and is going to bring, I think, a lot to the team.
I'll let you catch your breath real quick. So we all know this, and you've been in the game for a while with recruiting. If, in fact, these kids are getting offered early now and they're saying, putting a little pressure on them to get the commitment from them, what's not to think that if they another school, quality school, comes in and says, hey, are you committed too early? Why don't you think about coming to us? Don't you think that's a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and that's why it was kind of shocking to me. I didn't really believe that when this kind of pandemic started and recruits started to commit a little bit sooner than we've seen before, I thought it was kind of going to go the opposite way. And you'd have recruits kind of hold off on decisions, knowing they couldn't take visits. They wanted to see these places up close. And kind of the opposite happened, where recruits start to make decisions right away. And you start to see that kind of snowball with, prospects all over the country making their choices. So, that was my initial thing when all that started happening was, well, we're going to see a wave of decommitments at some point when everything's kind of balanced out, when everything's kind of returned to somewhat normal. I thought, you know, there's going to be some decommitments. So I do think that's still part of kind of what's going to happen as this process plays out.
I do too.
I do really think that it's something to watch. And I don't think anything right now is set in stone. And you could see colleges do that as well. Say, hey, we know we have this guy. But we're still looking for someone that's maybe a little bit better as well, and you can see some guys kind of drop off that way as well.
We have about a minute left. So what's the real story behind Tony Fields leaving? That's a curious leave.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Obviously, it's a strange time to do so. We don't really know what's going on with the season, but it's late in the process to kind of get that going and get that transfer process going. But I think if there's one thing that you can look at him and when we talked to him in spring ball, the thing that continued to come up was the NFL. And I think when you look at that decision, I think you see that some of the schools that have offered him, USC has already offered him, Texas has already offered him, West Virginia has already offered him today, now that he's officially in the transfer portal. I think he sees a chance to potentially get to the NFL somewhere else. And I think that's something that's kind of maybe the underlying theme of why he made this decision. It's obviously not a good sign for Arizona when you lose not only one of your top defensive players, but just one of your top players overall on the entire team. And so it's not good for Arizona, but I think for him, I think he sees an opportunity to maybe potentially make his NFL dreams come true and do that at a different place.
Totally agree with you. It's curious about the whole thing, because a guy like that does not leave this late into the game. Hey, thanks for calling in quickly, and enjoy California. I may not see you again.
Who knows? Steve?
Who's better off, you or me?
I don't know.
We'll be well. Thanks a bunch, Matt.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. That was Matt Moreno of Go Easy Cats here on 1030 The Voice. Let's take a quick break and talk to TJ Jeskiewicz, the new executive director of El Tour de Tucson.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply. Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn-out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
Camille Rivas Rutherford with Coldwell Banker Realty has been one of the top producing real estate agents in Tucson, Oro Valley, Marana, and Vail for more than 20 years. Let her help you find your dream home in southern Arizona. Her passion and enthusiasm for real estate has helped her become one of the most respected and trusted realtors in the area. And she was recently named a recipient of Coldwell Banker's 2019 International President Circle Award. Camille's approach to sales and marketing and selling or buying a home is second to none. Give her a call at 520-250-5192.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera, alongside TJ Jeskiewicz, the new executive director of El Tour de Tucson. TJ, welcome again.
Thanks, Steve.
So who in their right mind comes from Iowa in the middle of July to Tucson?
Well, it's been an interesting trip since I got here. I experienced already driving through a monsoon. And
where did you catch that at?
Yeah, we caught it about Texas Canyon. I don't know if you know where that is, coming in on I-10. And all of a sudden, it looked like a Midwest storm. And I'm like, wait, we're going into the desert. Why does it look like, Oklahoma or something like that? So monsoon that kind of like blew us around a little bit.
Be prepared.
That was fun. And then the day we moved, about record heat day, so about 118, so I don't know.
Well, it felt like 118.
Yeah, you know, by next week it'll be 121. So
right. Let me tell you, 121, 113, there's really
20, 21, whatever it takes.
Welcoming and good. Just avoid the snakes, the javelinas, and whatever else you see out there.
I've already seen javelinas in our backyard. We've seen coyotes, scorpions, you name it.
I know the one thing you've definitely seen are cyclists in this town. It's part of one of the reasons why you came here.
Well, it's obviously a great cycling community. The people that put together this community, I mean, obviously had nothing to do with putting great mountains and great scenery like that. But just the bike infrastructure in this town is second to none. Mm. I've been to a lot of places that I thought, hey, that's a really cool bike mecca. This place, I'll stack up against any place.
Uh-huh. What would you say is second or third? Can you compare it to other?
Well, there's other neat communities like Madison, Wisconsin is a really neat bike community. Davis, California is really neat. Minneapolis is a nice urban one. But when you can hop on, the loop, Loop and ride, pretty much 118 miles or whatever it is, really without stopping for a car, going underneath or going over traffic, it's just an absolute gem. And for cyclists, I mean, that you probably don't realize how good you have it until you go to some of those other states that you come up to a stop sign and stop and break your rhythm. So I just think even just a loop, but even off the loop, just riding bike lanes and just gorgeous scenery. I mean, it's just you just can't get enough of it.
And that's pretty much 12 months out of the year.
Absolutely.
It depends on the time of day you leave to get out there.
Well, some people might be a little squeamish here about riding in 30 degrees, where I came from in Iowa recently.
That was called Tuesday.
Tank tops, in 30 degrees. So I'm sure my blood will get a little thinner after I'm here for a little bit. But boy, you could ride 365 a year here, and that's really neat.
Right. Maybe not in those monsoons that you're talking, because they're coming soon. Maybe not. They're running late a little. You have a curious past. You were in Iowa with one of the great rides, Ragbri. Fantastic ride. I know a lot of people in Tucson who've ridden in it a number of years. Fun ride.
Oh, yeah. It's a different type of ride. It's a social ride, whereas El Tour is, pretty much put your head down and go. You want to try to get personal bests, and you're really stretching your limits and just putting out maximum effort. Where Ragbri is an event, you slow down and smell the roses and stop and visit with people, eat a piece of pie, drink a beer, have a corn on the cob or a pork chop. So complete, the only thing similar I would say is it's on two wheels and that's about it. But, they're both fun.
And people who love cycling.
Oh, absolutely. And I think all these great cycling events, I mean, it brings out, you know, there's similar people that ride El Tour that would ride mm-hmm. Ragbri. But, you know, it's nice to experience different types of cycling events, because if you just did events like El Tour or other, you know, mountain major biking, events yeah. or the 24-hour of El Pueblo, you know, those events, you need to mix it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they say, you know, things like El Tour or Ragbri are on people's bucket lists. I did events like Bike New York and other events like that. I mean, they are definitely bucket list events for a reason. Mm-hmm. And each of them have a little different makeup of what makes us special.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So, yeah, it's good to experience different cycling events.
Well, now you're here. You've come here knowing the history, obviously the sure. big, long history, almost four decades of history. So you must see a nice future in it.
Oh, for sure. I you know, obviously, without that 38-year history, it's just another event. Mm-hmm. But when you know, there's not too many cycling events that have been going on for 38 years. You can count them probably on two hands. A lot of them have fallen by the wayside. So it just gives, you know, the people, the visionaries like Richard that started this event back in the 80s, you know, had something going on. Why bring all these people to Tucson to mm-hmm. ride and amazing stuff? And then to have this event still going on, you know, here we are 38 years later, and it's one of the top events in the entire country. So you put that together with just the potential of bringing, you know, more and more people here. I think this could be easily, you know, it's already one of the top events in the country, but it could be one of the top events in the world.
This is maybe a naive question. I've been with the El Tour for 7 years now, full disclosure. To me, it's kind of like a hidden gem. And I don't want to say hidden because that means that no one knows, but people know, but it's still a gem that people need to find out about.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, that word of mouth is the best cycling selling point.
Is that what sold Ragbri?
Absolutely. Because someone will come ride the event and say, wow, that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Not only did I, you know, have tremendous riding, but, you know, the people were great. The food was great. It's that overall experience that makes people's cycling trips really special. So it's not mm-hmm. just, hey, I knocked off 102 miles on the bike and here's my time. But you know what? People remember, you know, I had the coldest beer ever after that ride, and I had the best, you know, burrito I've ever had in my life, you know, because I earned it. And right. those are things that make your trip a little bit more special. And so mm-hmm. so those are the types of things I think that legend can grow by getting more people involved, getting more, you know, just people to take a look at it. Because once they come down here and get a feel, they're going to be back for more.
Right, right. We talk about bucket list a lot, and it is a bucket list.
Sure.
But that bucket list you can do two or three times, oh, if not more.
No doubt, no doubt. And that's the thing. You know, you look at the history of how many people have done, you know, hey, they've done 20 L tours or they've done mm-hmm. 15 L tours. It's very important to, you know, the culture of this community. And, you know, those people just need to share that love, you mm-hmm. know, put it on their social media, say, hey, come join me for this ride, invite friends, invite family. And, you know, that's what it's all about. Just, you know, being proud of your community and wanting to show it off to other cyclists throughout the world.
Part of that is it may be the same name, El Tour de Tucson, but like this year, it's going to be a different route in mm-hmm. El Tour de Tucson. So it's different yet the same.
Yes. Well, you know, going south, going down into some areas like, you know, Sahuarita and Green Valley, those are areas that El Tour hasn't been down to in the mm-hmm. past. So a little bit different. I think it's going to be a little bit faster route. I was out there the other day with Tim Escobedo, who does a lot of the route planning. We drove the route. We didn't bike it because it was about 119 degrees or whatever it was. But we're taking a look at the different areas, climbing through like the mines.
And that was your first impression?
Oh, pecan fields. I mean, just gorgeous, changing scenery. It's not mm-hmm. just 102 miles to the same exact cactus after cactus. Mm-hmm. There's such diversity in the route, going through the Boneyard or going up Pistol Hill or, you know, going by, you know, and the Rincon Mountain area. So there's a lot of diversity with this route, a little bit faster than it's been in the past, but absolutely gorgeous.
And we got about 2 minutes left here. still pushing forward for the event November 21st. Nothing's changed.
Well, that's the game plan. You know, obviously there's things that are so fluid with the coronavirus and the pandemic going on. So, you know, if you asked me 3 weeks ago what I felt like compared to today, I mean, it's just ever changing. So sure. What is it going to be like in 4 months? And, you know, we're staying on top. We've got a medical advisory board that have been giving us great advice, a lot of local flavor on that advisory board, just keeping us up to date with what's going on throughout the world.
Well, along those lines, there's some positive news today. The FC Tucson, a local pro soccer team, is coming back. They're playing beginning next week. They're going to have 16 weeks of a schedule. No fans in the stands, but you can see things kind of open up, and then other places not so much.
Yeah, I think if you take a pulse throughout the country, there's been some great things that are going in the positive direction. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Walt Disney World opened up.
There was a race car event just a couple nights ago.
Yeah, I mean, so there's more and more. You know, there's obviously golf tournaments going on, you know, left and right, you know, with the soccer team coming back. More and more positive things. Hopefully we keep heading in that same direction because that's what we need.
Mm-hmm. No question. I wanted to ask you, because you're around bicyclists a lot. We have about 45 seconds left. The personality of them. It's a little different.
Yeah. You know, it's different. In different parts of the country, they're a little bit different. So mountain bikers are a little wired a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Roadies are wired differently. Triathletes are wired differently. You know what? But, you know, a lot of times if you sit down at the table with all of them, you know, they can share a laugh. They can talk the commonalities because, you know, they have that love of being outdoors and going fast. Sometimes.
And they're fit. And they're fit, the darn guys. They're fit, which is good. I got to get on a bike.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here. Come back on the other side here on 1030 The Voice.
Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized by Forbes as one of Arizona's best credit unions 3 years in a row. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer low rates on loans, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit hughesfcu.org/best. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
Being named the 2020 El Tour de Tucson dedication recipient was such an honor. I have been a part of El Tour in the past, and I know about some of these amazing names that have been dedication recipients in the past, but it was an honor to be chosen for that, not only for me, but for my organization that supports people with disabilities.
I've met so many people through the riding and through El Tour that are now some of my closest and dearest friends.
One of the things that makes El Tour, you know, so safe and so well ran is all the law enforcement that gets involved blocking up the roads. My favorite part of the course on the newer course was the backside of Pistol Hill.
I think what's amazing about El Tour is there's something for everyone's ability level. It includes the opportunity to be out there. You can even do a 1 miler. You can do something at home if you're limited to being indoors. That's what's great about it is all abilities are encouraged. It's very inclusive.
Hey, welcome back to Why on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. I want to let people know that Jay Gonzalez has taken a much-needed day off. He's out in the hills. And I have TJ Jeskiewicz, the executive director of El Tour de Tucson. The new, I think you've been here about a week or so.
Yeah, that's about it.
What have you learned about Tucson? You've been here a couple times, but just briefly.
Yeah. You know, it's just a really cool community and very close-knit community. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a big, small town in my estimation.
I call it Mayberry.
Mayberry, yeah. It's
Wait till you meet Aunt B.
and you know, I'm trying to eat in every different restaurant I possibly can. That's
well,
a non-chain.
That's
a locally owned type of, because I just absolutely love all different types of foods and different things like that. So mm-hmm. I've been trying to, you know, get all those under my belt as quickly as possible, which will expand my belt line, I'm sure.
Well, let me tell you, if it's Tucson's known for cycling, it's known for food, two different types of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very good.
Yeah.
It's all very good.
So far, I haven't met one thing I haven't liked here. So.
Yeah, right. Well, you'll find there's plenty of places, especially when they open up more. You can sit in and talk to people and get to know the people.
Sure.
Because you're right. It's a small big town community. To me, it's Mayberry. We want to be Raleigh, which Raleigh is in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of cyclists that come down from Phoenix to write in this event.
Oh, you bet. I think anytime you get a world-class event and a great course for people to ride on, you're going to attract people from not just mm-hmm. this area. Mm-hmm. I think they said somewhere about 70% of the people are from this community. So, that could change over time. I think if we promote it more to people, just say, look, this is just an amazing place to come ride. You're going to feel really welcome here and really enjoy your experience. We're going to bring more people from the outside to join those people from Tucson that ride.
Sure. Maybe some Iowans?
I bet you we're going to have a few more Iowans. I've got quite a few friends that already said, hey, we're hoping to be down there in November and really looking forward to the ride.
What would the temperature be up there?
In November?
Yeah.
It can snow. I've been to football games in November that there was snow on the ground and even in October. So, it typically would be about 20 degrees.
Really? That's a high?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll take 113 any day over 20 degrees.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's not even a question.
You pretty much hang up your bike about October in the Midwest because, there'll be a, rogue snowstorm that'll come in October and just, somewhere right around Columbus Day and all of a sudden, bam, you get hit with a snowstorm.
Sure. No, I'm here for a reason. I don't like cold weather. You want to transition into sports? Because I know you're a big sports guy.
Oh, yeah.
Florida grad.
Yes.
Kind of was there for a lot of the heyday stuff.
Yeah. When I first got there, they were really bad. I graduated high school in 83, so came into a really average Florida program. And
you're talking about football.
Yeah, as far as football. And they kind of poked the sleeping giant because, if they ever got it going on. I mean, obviously, the Hurricanes were great back then. Yeah. And in the early 80s, they were winning national championships. But all of a sudden, Florida decided they could be really good, too. And all of a sudden, they got Coach Spurrier down there in 1990. 6 years later, they won a national championship. So I don't think there could be anything better in the world to experience that first national championship. I mean, obviously, you had one here in Arizona basketball. There's just, nothing more exciting as a sports fan when your team reaches, the plateau of a national championship. So yeah, I'm a huge Florida fan. I became an Iowa fan living there the last 17 years. I hope to become an Arizona fan.
I was going to ask you that because you've been in town and we've talked briefly about you buying season tickets to the football season.
Absolutely.
But you're surprised on how inexpensive they are.
Yeah. I was used to, SEC prices and, Big Ten prices. And it was, surprisingly really affordable.
So you did it right away.
Oh, absolutely. And part of the reason was you kind of heard in the background, well, if they did limit the number of people that would go into the stadium, that maybe it would just be season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. And so, I immediately just looked at the stadium map and I said, I like going to the games and my daughter likes going to the football games. And why not? I wanted to dive in, head first and get right into the culture of it. And I love live sports. If it's college basketball, if it's college baseball, softball, college football, you name it. I love live events.
So reasonable prices. Did you get good seats?
Oh, yeah. They're about 40-yard line, a little bit high up. But hey, we'll get the first year under our belt. Hopefully, we'll be in the stadium this year and watching a resurgent Arizona team, right?
Well, this is an observation I've had. I've written a number of stories when I was at the paper. And I still say this because I still believe it, that Tucson is a fickle town. If you don't win, they don't show up. And I'm sure I could say that of any college town in the country.
Yeah, I would say that, pretty much there's a lot of fair weather fans, unfortunately, because, these kids, they're kids out there playing and they need support. Mm-hmm. And if they're, if they're 0-10, they need people, that are out there cheering them on. And so, but I think you're going to find that in any place, you're going to see empty stadiums if they're not up to expectations. Mm-hmm. So, I'm really excited to, dive into Arizona football. Hopefully it'll be very, very soon.
You were talking about graduate high school in 83. So you finished college maybe 87, 88.
Sure.
About there in same time as me. So what was the perception of Arizona? Because I always like to get people's perceptions from not around here. football, basketball, especially basketball, because that's when Arizona's basketball program started taking off.
Yeah. So not much perception football, to be honest with you.
There is
you
none,
know,
right.
when you're on the East Coast over there, there's not much. I mean, it was basically looked at as a basketball school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think from the time that Luke came over here, and I would not be, you know, kind if I didn't say that, you know, you borrowed Luke from the University of Iowa.
You and every Iowa guy.
And, you know, he made, you know what, he put his stamp on Iowa basketball. It took him to the Final Four.
They still talk about it today.
Yeah. I've got a friend over there. Bobby Hansen was a freshman when Lute recruited him. And Mark Gannon, another guy. You probably don't know those names too well. Bobby, you might know. But those two guys were on Lute's team back in, oh gosh, I don't even know what year that was. They went to the Final Four.
1980.
Yeah, that was back when you had the Final Four and you had the third place game,
right,
if you remember
right,
that.
Right, I mean, right.
Us older guys remember those. Really big, good decision to get rid of that game, the consolation loser game or whatever they called that.
They weren't playing well, yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, I mean, if Luke didn't head over to Arizona, because, again, I think he came from Long Beach.
Long Beach, right.
So he went Long Beach to Iowa. I went from Iowa to Arizona. So did you ask Luke, what the heck are you thinking?
I think they did back in the day.
Yeah.
And he also, when he got here, says, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Because they were so bad.
But it did take him to the Final Four, so he had a good game plan there.
No, yeah, no question. In fact, like I say, people in Iowa still talk about those days. Fondly.
Yeah.
I say, you know, why did he have to leave? But Arizona benefited, no question. So the perception was what it was. Back in the late 80s, obviously they had Sean Elliott, Steve Kerr, yada. They were pretty good. And then they met Florida in the Final Four, although they didn't play them in the Final Four.
Nope.
They played Arkansas. Florida played Duke.
Yeah, they came up against Grant Hill and Duke.
Right.
That
right.
was back, you know, we had Lon Kruger, who was a good coach, took him to the
Still
Final Four.
Good coach, yes.
And, you know, he had a good stint over at UNLV. I think his son played up the road at Arizona State, Kevin.
Right.
I had Kevin in basketball camp when I was working at the University of Florida. And that, you know, I don't know if I mentioned that. I worked at the University of Florida in the marketing department for football and basketball. So I got my feet wet a little bit with college sports. But after that, we brought in Billy Donovan. And Billy Donovan had just a tremendous run. To win two national championships at the University of Florida in basketball is one of the greatest feats. You can't imagine how a sleepy basketball program Florida was until Billy D came in and just took them to a whole different level.
Yeah, I remember that team. 2008, I think, as they beat Ohio State, Greg Oden and them.
Back-to-back, they beat UCLA and they beat Ohio State and, you know, never looked back. They had, I mean, that team, they just recognized them, you know, with Joakim Noah, Al Horford. I mean,
they were
Corey Brewer. I mean, three guys that were staples in the NBA for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, that's Udonis Haslam. They're I mean, solid, solid team. But Billy D was the catalyst. I mean, now he's still over it in Oklahoma, at OKC,
OKC,
and still doing fine.
Yeah, no question. So Florida, I think Florida, Arizona, back then Duke, Arkansas was very good because they won the title in 94 when all those teams were there.
We played Arizona a home and away back about before they really took off, probably about 2005, somewhere around there. I remember, you know, we had one game out here that lost to Arizona and then went back and beat them in Gainesville. So, again, two powerhouse programs that it was great. I would love to see more of that happen. And I think we'll have it too soon, but it'd be great to see some of those neat matchups again.
Do you remember much of that game here?
I remember we were up by a lot and we lost it somehow.
That is still considered one of the best sporting days for Arizona history.
Huh.
Arizona had just beaten or had come back from 20 points down or 20 points down in the New Mexico Bowl, you know, for whatever that's worth, against Nevada, I think it was. I can't remember. And they came back and they won that game in the last improbable. And so they won that game and everyone was excited. That night they were going to play number 3 or number 5 Florida.
Yeah.
Came here, was down big, and they won on a last second shot.
Yep.
And
yep.
People went bonkers in Tucson.
Yeah, I remember. And then, it was like Patrick Young, I think, was the top player back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he was just, big strong guy?
Big strong guy. Yeah. Big rebounding guy. So, yeah, I mean, we've had some really good teams there at Florida, and, you know, hopefully they'll get back on track. You know, not having, you know, Billy as a coach was certainly a little bit of a setback, but Mike White's got him back, you know, feeling pretty good about themselves.
Let's take a quick break here, Tom, and come back and talk about college sports versus pro sports. I'm a big college sports guy.
Me too.
We'll come back here on the other side.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance company in Tucson.
For the month of July, we're going to donate 2% of our sales to a local charity from in-stock purchases.
Come shop at our store and work with our amazing sales team.
Dustin, David, Brian, Alex, me, and Peter.
You can choose from a list of local charities for us to donate to.
The only way we can give back is if you shop local.
Only at Tucson Appliance, where our low price is your priority.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll free at 888-881-5765.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10-3 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. Jay Gonzalez is taking the day off, much deserved. In with me is TJ Jeskowitz, the new executive director of El Tour de Tucson. Let's kind of go back and talk some more about sports. So you have a lot of cool names that you've followed and you covered back at Florida, now at Iowa. So who was the best athlete you saw in person?
Best athlete in person. Well, I got to meet Muhammad Ali, which I think if you ask me who the greatest name I've ever met. Seeing Jordan live was easily the greatest athlete that I've seen actually playing.
Caught him when?
Against the Orlando Magic back towards I'd say about 97 somewhere around
his
there.
So his heyday still winning.
Oh yeah. Back when he was wearing 23.
Yeah, what about at Florida?
At Florida, oh gosh, Emmitt Smith was there during the heyday. You know, I mean, watching that guy run was incredible. Got to see Herschel Walker run, Bo Jackson. So you know, I'll brag about the SEC. I know a lot of people hate the SEC, but it's pretty tough to you know, look at those athletes. And you know, Florida State had some great athletes. Miami had some great athletes then.
Good luck with those tickets because this is not SEC football.
No. But yeah, I mean, just. You know, I like any good competitive game, and when you see those guys like Bo Jackson run the ball, I mean, even if he's running for 285 against you, you're like in awe.
Right, because you don't see that often.
No,
especially that type of athlete.
Yeah, I remember, you know, Chris Jackson at LSU scored back when it was before he was
changed his name.
Yeah, and I think he hit like 60 points against Florida, and I think the group gave him a standing ovation because they just looked at that as saying, wow, what a great performance, and it's really cool to see. And anytime you just appreciate something like that.
Right. So what were some of the better games you can remember back in?
I went to the national championship when Florida won the first one against Florida State in the Sugar Bowl, and thanks to Arizona State losing to Ohio State, we actually got to win the national championship. I know it's probably a bitter pill to swallow for Arizona State people, but I'm sure Arizona fans really like that. And
we
beat our rivals Florida State 52-20 that day, so it was just a great. I remember being on Bourbon Street, and Kurt Kerbstreit was walking down the street, and he was just doing game day then just working with ESPN, just pretty much fresh out of college. So this is like, you know, mid-90s. And he was just like high-fiving all the Gator fans because he played, you know, football for Ohio State, and they had just taken out Arizona State with Jake the Snake at that time. And, you know, everyone's just like loving, oh, thanks, Ohio State. You know, you gave us our first national championship. So that right there, easily, you know, the top sports moment I've seen live in person.
Right. No, that's very cool. And good thing is you remember because you were down in New Orleans at the time.
Yeah.
It was still early, I guess.
Yeah, never forget that. If you ever have a chance to go to the Sugar Bowl, no matter what, if your team gets to go to the Sugar Bowl, it is one of the best bowl games experiences of all time. I've been to the Fiesta Bowl. Unfortunately, Florida played Nebraska and got steamrolled by Nebraska back when Nebraska was Nebraska.
Yeah, what you're talking about? Mid-80s?
95, right around there.
95
years. The next year, they won the national championship. So they came to Fiesta Bowl back when they played it, you know, in the Rocks. I don't know what, Sun Devil Stadium.
Right.
And that was Tommy Frazier, Lawrence Phillips. You know, they had a great Tommy Frazier was out of Bradenton, Florida, a quarterback that Florida let go somehow. Lawrence Phillips, rest his soul. I think he passed away after a really hard life. But boy, those guys could stack up some yards on you.
Yeah, Arizona faced Nebraska in the bowl game in San Diego. I think they did it twice.
I'd rather play him now.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, so. Scott Frost having a little difficult time getting him on track, but yeah.
Best coach you had at the time, but not that you had at Florida, but just that you've seen and you've kind of were impressed by.
You know, Urban Meyer had some great years at Florida. I mean, he wasn't a real warm person.
He's not likable.
But you know what? I mean, the guy knew how to win and got the most out of his players. I mean, he had some kind of shady characters.
Hernandez kid.
Aaron Hernandez, but on the other side, he had Tim Tebow. And if you ask me who my favorite college athlete of all time is, our family's is Tim Tebow. Just, a wonderful human being as well as just – In my estimation, and this is my opinion, but I think he's the greatest college football quarterback of all time.
Really?
Yeah, because he just took that team on his shoulders and would not lose. Mm-hmm. And so the years they won, beating Oklahoma, just taking them on his shoulders and just, you know, for 3 years, he just dominated college football.
It's funny because I noticed stuff like that too. Guys who don't have all the talent in the world, but can will their way to victory.
Yeah.
And that's called being a good leader and people believing in you.
Yeah, you tell me, you know, household names off those teams that won the national championship back then. You can't rattle them off. It's not like at Miami where you had, you know, nine guys that played in the NFL.
Right.
So I think Tebow just elevated. He wasn't a great NFL quarterback. Played some good years for the Broncos. But he really elevated that entire team, and that's what a great leader does.
You said you were a Bronco fan?
Absolutely.
Because of him? Not because of him.
No, I started becoming a Bronco fan because they were one of the best teams when I was kind of at that
John
age.
Elway.
Even before that. We're talking Tom Jackson.
75?
Yeah, back in when they played the Cowboys
Orange
in
Crush.
The Super Bowl.
Orange Crush. Yes.
Yeah. So I called myself TJ because I like Tom Jackson, number 57, Hall of Famer. I like the Broncos. And I was living in South Florida at the time, and all my friends were Dolphin fans, and I just couldn't stand the Dolphins. And I just became a Bronco fan, and that was, you know, about 40 years ago.
Yeah, well, 75-ish, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Since they played Dallas, I was a Cowboy fan growing up, and I do remember that game.
They got beat by the Cowboys. I remember it. And they lost quite a few Super Bowls until they finally got one.
Right. John Elway finally pulled it off.
Yeah, got two of them.
Yeah, so that's cool. What else? You were a Cincinnati Red fan, you said?
Yeah, Reds fan. Pete Rose era, you know, Big Red Machine, Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench, you know.
Cesar Geronimo.
Yeah, just Tony Perez. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a wonderful team. Hopefully Pete will make it to the Hall of Fame one day.
Do you think he will eventually?
I hope he does. I hope he makes it before he passes. You know, because sometimes he's
older than you think. 75-ish.
Yeah, he's he sets up shop in places like Vegas all the time. It's probably not good for your health. You know, Pete was a tremendous player.
Did you ever see him in person when he was Pete Rose back in the day?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So because you see him now, he's like a rock. He's like a huge rock.
Well, he kind of had the body of like Tony Gwynn, you know, kind of that compact, just, you know, some of these baseball players, you know, they don't look like athletes. You know, you look at John Kruk or someone like that, and you're like, wow, that guy's a baseball player. Ken Herbeck, you know, some of these big guys. But Pete was solid. You know, you can't hit a baseball if you're, you know, if you're not in shape and all So he was just a hard-nosed player. I mean, loved the game. I mean, Charlie Hustle was knocking over Ray Fosse in the, you know, just memories like that of Pete Rose is what I think of. I don't think of him as the manager. I don't think of him as the guy playing the ponies or betting on baseball. But, you know, I just remember when I was, you know, say 10 years old watching Charlie Hustle, and it couldn't be any better.
Me too, because 75, the World Series, I was a fan, and still back then it was huge. You're 11. What else do you live for but baseball and fun? Carlton Fisk, and then 76, they did it again, even with a better team.
Yeah, great team. I mean, I think baseball back then, again, my opinion, it was a heyday of baseball. Just great rivalries back when there was the AL West, and they played the Dodgers and you know, you hated the Dodgers back then, but, you know, to beat Boston.
Because they were good, too.
Oh,
Garvey and Say and,
oh, great teams.
And all these guys. Yeah, great. No, because it was a good rivalry.
And a lot of them, you know, growing up in South Florida, we had spring training until Arizona stole all those teams. You know, the Dodgers would come down every year, the Yankees, the Reds, all these people would do spring training. So when I'm 10 years old, I'm riding my bike to watch these guys, and there's, you know, you're looking up and there's Reggie Jackson, and there's you know, there's Bobby Mercer, and there's all these, you know, just legends of baseball, Thurman Munson. So all these guys were so approachable back in the 70s, and it's so different today where you know, there's these big stadiums. I mean, it was small stadiums, and, you know, a kid would walk up with a baseball and you'd get 10 autographs on a baseball because it was going on your shelf and not into a...
Did you do that?
Oh, absolutely.
So did you still have them?
I've got a lot of my old stuff.
That's very cool. That's right, because I have the same kind of memorabilia. Not to that extent, but that's cool.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff.
Great show today. Thanks for coming in. We'll have to do this again when we're just talking sports and talking as we get closer to El Tour.
I'd love to do it again,
Steve. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to talk and reminisce. I'm going to start to tear up here talking about my kid days because we're kind of in the same wheelhouse. Good to have you, TJ. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week here on Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice.